try to bring out, you know, what we see, who is talking, and what they're talking about. But yes, it's certainly the overall, the literal overall statement. If you look at the headings in your Bible, you'll see the interpretation from the literal side. All right. So we start out with the first chapter, verses 1 through 7, and this concept of you know, I just titled it love. There's other ways that that can be titled, certainly, but we see the young woman as she's thinking and says, "May he kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for your love is better than wine. Your oils have a pleasing fragrance. Your name is like purified oil. Therefore, the maidens love you. Draw me after you and let us run together. The king has brought me into his chambers." So we see at this point that the king has sent for her, brought her into the chambers, and she's really contemplating this love that she has. At this point, we really don't know anything more than that. But then we see in verse 6 that she seems to be, you know, conscious of herself, right? Self-conscious of her appearance. Talks about the fact that, you know, "Do not stare at me because I'm swarthy, for the sun has burned me. My mother's sons were angry with me, and they made me caretaker of the vineyards, but I have not taken care of my own vineyards." So, one who is not from much, and this the sun has burned me, one who is tanned and certainly not has been taken care of as some of the ones who would be in Solomon's court. And so she seems to be very, you know, downplaying her own looks here. And then in verse 7, it starts out, "Tell me, O you whom my soul loves, where do you pasture your flocks?" So this is, I think, one of the first times that we see this concept of, is she talking about Solomon? Would she be talking about Solomon as far as, "Whom my soul loves, where do you pasture your flocks?" Is he kind of a caretaker of the flocks, Solomon? He would not be. It would be more of a someone with a shepherd, with a shepherd's job. So we move on now to the eighth verse after we see this thought and this love that she has, and really in verse 9. We see that Solomon begins to speak to her. Yes. Right. Yeah. And in chapter 6, and we'll get to there, but in chapter 6, verse 8 specifically, it says there are 60 queens and 80 concubines. So this is not, point taken, right? This is not near the end of Solomon's life, because Solomon had 700 queens and 300 concubines for a total of 1,000. So this would make her, what's that, like number 141, right, as an overall, if we're taking the numbers, right? But no, that's a valid point. I mean, another way that you could look at that based upon the entire, you know, the end of that verse, that she could be asking, where do I fall in this structure, right? Where, how different would I be? In verse 9, we begin to pick up Solomon's conversation to her, and, you know, tells her that she's the most beautiful among the women, right, in verse 8. And then in verse 9 it says, "To me, my darling, you are like my mare among the chariots of Pharaoh. Your cheeks are lovely with ornaments, your beads your neck with strings of beads. And so this is some of the language that I don't think that a young man would woo his woman with today. I don't think that they would take very well to the fact of, you know, comparing her to a horse, right? But if we look back at the poetic language that is of this time, and you certainly can, I think, attribute these comments to Solomon, because he is, because of the way that he's talking about her and the what he's comparing her to. While the king was at his table, my perfume gave forth its fragrance. My beloved is to me a pouch of myrrh, which lies all night between my breasts. My beloved is to me a cluster of henna blossoms in the vineyards of Engedi. It's kind of a comment back that she speaks to him. And in 15, he talks again about how beautiful you are, my darling, how beautiful you are. Your eyes are like the doves. And she replies back to Solomon, apparently here, that says, how handsome you are, my beloved, and so pleasant. Indeed, our couch is luxuriant. And talks about the house. Then in verse 2 of chapter 2, he says, like a lily among the thorns, so is my darling among the maidens. So certainly she stands out. He loves her physically. He talks about her physical attributes. She and him are having this conversation back and forth here. Then we see what I think is kind of a change in chapter 2, beginning in verse 3. This concept that she seems to be longing for someone else, and specifically in verse 6, she ends that verse, I'm sorry, in verse 5, she says, sustain me with raisins, refresh me with apples, for I am sick with love. And so this whole portion here seems to lend itself to her thinking about her previous love, or her beloved one. And a main point is, well, and this obviously can be open to other interpretations too. It's very difficult, but in the case where there are three characters, I believe that we can see here that her view is back to saying, I'm thinking of and my beloved one here. I think a comment that was made during the last time this was taught in the class, and I heard the comment on the recording, was that at the end of verse 7 here, really in the entire verse 7, I adjure you, O daughters of Jerusalem, by the gazelles or by the hens of the field, that you do not arouse or awaken my love until she pleases. It's again stated in chapter 3 and verse 5, this concept of not to stir or awaken the love until it pleases. What are some of the thoughts on that particular phrase that anyone may have here? Yes, in chapter 8. That's right. Yes. Correct. And I think that this phrase at the end of 7 and at the end of 5 in chapter 3, as well as in 8, when it's said again, is that shows that some sort of restraint, right? That she's just not throwing herself into this situation to see how it works out. I think something that's really contrast to today, right? Is that there is this restraint, and that this courtship can happen in a way that is physically restrained. And I think a very, very good point, and one that I would agree with you on that. And 13 through 14, or 13 and 14 in chapter 1, I think she is looking more toward that beloved. I agree. So here we have this interchange, and then at this point in the book, in the song, that we kind of see this concept where she has this longer thought about her true love, from really verse 8 all the way to verse 5 of chapter 3, and we see her thinking about this beloved of hers. It says, "Listen, my beloved, behold, he is coming, climbing on the mountains, leaping on the hills. My beloved is like a gazelle or a young stag. Behold, he's standing behind our wall. He's looking through the window. He's peering through the lattice." And then in this section, coming up in verse 10 through 13, it's like what the shepherd says, but she's thinking about what he has said to her. And so she's thinking it here, but it's words that would come from him. And he says, "Arise, my darling, my beautiful one, and come along. For behold, the winter is past, the rain is over and gone, and the flowers have already appeared in the land. The time has arrived for the pruning of the vines, and the voice of a turtle dove has been heard in our land. The fig tree has ripened its figs, and the vines and its blossom have given forth their fragrance. Arise, my darling, my beautiful one, and come along." And so this concept of, I think when Scott taught this before, he talked about, you know, this concept of spring and the springtime of their love. We could see that language even being used, you know, we could tie that into some things that we may use today, right? But this is, it is time, the winter part is over, now there are times for things to blossom and to flower. So she continues to think about that, then she moves on. It's almost like a daydream scene, and then in chapter 3, it starts out, "On my bed, night after night, I sought him." So this seems to be a dream that she has, a somewhat troubled dream that she has, as the title in my Bible says. But "On my bed, I sought him with whom my soul loves. I sought him but found him not. I will rise now and go about the city in the streets and in the squares. I will seek him whom my soul loves. I sought him but found him not." Skip down to verse 5 again, and she says, you know, to the maidens, like, "Do not stir up or awaken love until it pleases." So she has this whole concern that she goes out and is trying to look for him, right? In verse 4 specifically, it says, "Scarcely I had left them when I found him whom my soul loves, and I held on to him and would not let go." So this thought of the fact that she remembers him as she's away from him, and then she dreams at night that he has gone and left her, but she has sought him out and she has found him and brought him back and is not going to let go of him. Then we kind of see this scene change, and I don't know if I'm behind here. So we kind of see this scene change in chapter 3 and verse 6 through 11, and this was where we kind of see a narrator kind of lay out what is happening here. And so, "What is this coming up from the wilderness like columns of smoke, perfumed with myrrh and frankincense, with all scented powders of the merchants? Behold, it's the traveling couch of Solomon, 60 mighty men around it, of the mighty men of Israel. all of them wielders of the sword, expert in war. Each man has a sword on his side, guarding against the terrors of the night. Talks about he made himself a chair. It's covered in silver and gold and purple fabric, right? And in verse 11, go forth, O daughters of Zion, and gaze on King Solomon with the crown with which his mother has crowned him on the day of his wedding and on the day of his gladness of heart. So what do we see here from Solomon and how he appears and comes in? You see his great, you know, his wealth, his majesty as he comes in, and you see this impressive scene, you know, once again about who he is and what he has and all these things, which would be intended to help sway the young woman. Right? In chapter 4, and this really is, I think, the best defense in this chapter of why there are probably three main characters, because in chapter 4, verses 1 through 6, it's a comments from Solomon once again, the second time, discussing with her how beautiful you are, my darling, how beautiful you are, your eyes are like doves behind your veil, your hair is like a flock of goats that have descended from Mount Gilead, your teeth are like a flock of newly shorn ewes which have come up from their washing. Okay. Once again, things that we probably wouldn't use to describe the woman that we love today, but certainly poetic language. At the end of verse 3, your lips are like scarlet thread and your mouth is lovely. I think we can easily attribute this to Solomon, because even in verse 4 it says your neck is like the Tower of David, and he starts to describe this Tower of David. Her response is in verse 7, which says, it's in verse 6, I think I meant. Until the cool of the day when the shadows fleet away, I will go my way to the mountain of myrrh and to the hill of frankincense. So he expresses all these deep thoughts of love to her, and her response back to him is pretty mundane. But then in verses 7 through 15, I think this is where we see a different approach and a different concept of this shepherd and how he tries to woo her. He talks about, you are altogether beautiful, my darling. There's no blemish in you. Come with me from Lebanon, my bride. May you come with me from Lebanon. Skip down. 9. You have made my heart beat faster, my sister, my bride. You have made my heart beat faster with a single glance of your eye, with a single strand of your necklace. How beautiful is your love. So here, as Jeff had said earlier, we see this concept of this shepherd, as he talks to her, is not talking about all of her physical attributes, right? He's talking about things that are much deeper, things that are her, and how she is inside and not outside. He says that she's beautiful, but he doesn't just focus only on those things, right? Right. That's right. In verse 12, it says, a garden locked is my sister, my bride. A rock garden locked, a spring sealed up. The fact that she is a chaste woman, that she is sealed up there. Good point. So then in her response to that love that's being expressed, we see in verse 16, I think is where she speaks back, is from the woman that's talking. It says, awake, O north wind, and come, wind of the south. Make my garden breathe out fragrance. Let its spices be wafted about. May my beloved come into his garden and eat its choice fruits. So you see the difference between her reaction to what Solomon says versus her reaction to what the shepherd says to her. Right? She wants to be with him. And she sees the difference in the way that they're talking to each other. So now she continues on in chapter 5, and it's at this point they're obviously separated by some distance, because she seems to be in Jerusalem, He is probably back in the, actually the land of Issachar is where they would have been from, where Shunammite is, so where Shunam is. So she's separated from him. Now we begin in chapter 5 and verse 2. It says, I was asleep, but my heart was awake. So once again, she is searching for her one that she loves. I was asleep, but my heart was awake. A voice, my beloved, was knocking. Open to me, my sister, my darling, my dove, my perfect one, for my head is drenched with dew and my locks with the damp of the night. So here the shepherd comes to her and it says knocks on her door, yet the reaction here in verse 3, it says, I've taken off my dress, how can I put it on again? I've washed my feet, how can I dirty them again? My beloved extended his hand through the opening and my feelings were aroused for him. I arose to open my to open to my beloved. And then in verse 6, I opened to my beloved, but my beloved has turned away and is gone. So she has this dream or this thought about what has occurred. Now she is in this situation. He comes to her, but now he is gone. And so we see in the rest of this chapter her trying to go out and to find him again, right? And then we see a chorus in verse 9, I think, others that come in and say, you know, what kind of beloved is your beloved, O most beautiful among women? What kind of beloved is your beloved that thus you adjure us? And then in 10 through 16, she begins to talk about her beloved and how he is, his attributes, that he's dazzling and ruddy outside, or outstanding among 10,000. She talks about some of his physical attributes. And in 16, his mouth is full of sweetness, and he's wholly desirable. This is my beloved, this is my friend, O daughters of Jerusalem. And I think that's an interesting statement there in 16, where she calls out specifically that this is my friend, O daughters of Jerusalem. So she's looking for him. Chapter 6 begins with a chorus or a narrator, others that are saying, where is he that we can go help and find him? And then she simply says that he's gone down to his garden, to the beds, to pasture his flock. I am my beloved's, and my beloved is mine, he who pastures his flock among the lilies. So she is thinking about him and the fact that they are for each other. And then once again, in chapter 6 and verse 4, we see Solomon for the third time trying to talk to her and trying to woo her again. And talks about, you're as beautiful as tears of my darling, as lovely as Jerusalem, as awesome as an army with banners. Turn your eyes away from me, for they have confused me. Once again, talks about her teeth are like flocks of ewes, which have come up from their washing, and all these things. So has he changed the way that he's approaching his love for her, or trying to tell her how he loves her? He's kind of repeating himself here, once again, to let her know that, you know, he does love her. He loves her physical attributes. And it's here that we see in verse 8 that there are 60 queens and 80 concubines and maids without number. They even come in here and make comment about the fact that she is beautiful. And then they, you know, it goes back and forth to him about her face, her features. And in chapter 7, I think this is one of the more difficult pieces as far as trying to attribute this to someone. Some think that this is Solomon talking again in the first part of chapter 7, 1 through 5. others more about this chorus that is a group of people that are saying, how beautiful are your feet in sandals, O Prince daughter. The curves of your hips are like jewels, as they go through and describe these features. But then in verse 6, I think Solomon definitely picks back up when we see how beautiful and how delightful you are, my love, with all your charms. Your stature is like a palm tree, and your breasts are like its clusters. I said, I will climb the palm tree. I will take hold of its fruit stalks. Oh, may your breasts be like clusters of the vine, and the fragrance of your breath like apples. It goes down smoothly for my beloved, flowing gently through the lips of those who fall asleep. Now, I think here is kind of the point of what Solomon sees in her, okay? And some language, you know, very specific, a little bit more specific than we see in lots of places in the Bible, but he kind of shows, I think, when I consider, you know, this lust that he has for her, specifically what he wants to do, how he wants to be with her, you know, physically here, but then she is able to, once again, for the last time, kind of thwart that comments that he has made toward her. Look at all the things that he has, his riches, all the things that would be hers, and says in verse 10 that I am my beloved's and his desire is for me. It says, come, my beloved, let us go out into the country. Let us spend the night in the villages. Let us rise early and go to the vineyards and see whether the vine has budded and its blossoms have opened and whether the pomegranates have bloomed. There I will give you my love. So she kind of stops there, goes back and says, okay, this is really what I want. I want my beloved. So from here on out, we don't see any more kind of commentary from Solomon himself. We see this woman talking about what she wants and how she wants to be with her beloved. And then in verse 8, we begin to see some of the comments that are made by her brothers. I feel like I'm talking a lot, but I don't know that this lends itself to a whole bunch of interaction, so I apologize. And I'm way behind on slides. Maybe not. There we go. So at the end, it seems like she has come back to her beloved, and at the end of chapter 7, in verse 8, it says things like, and I believe Jeff had kind of made this comment earlier about, oh, that you were like a brother to me who nursed at my mother's breast. If I found you outdoors, I would kiss you. No one would despise me either. So this, they're brought up the same way, brought up kind of in the same manner. Her desire to let his left hand be under my head and his right hand embrace me. And then this last time that she says, or this comment is made about, I want you to swear, daughters of Jerusalem, do not arouse or awaken my love until she pleases. And that's chapter 8 and verse 4. A significant theme, I think, throughout as well, as Jeff had mentioned when he spoke. So, in verse 5, now we see her brothers speak in chapter 8. And we see this as they look out and they said, who's this coming up from the wilderness leaning on her beloved? Beneath the apple tree, I awaken you. There, your mother was in labor with you. Skip on down, because we don't have very much time. It talks about, in verse 6, put me like a seal over your heart. This is her talking now. Put me like a seal over her heart, over your heart, like a seal on your arm. For love is as strong as death. Jealousy is as severe as Sheol. Its flashes are flashes of fire, the very flame of the Lord. Many waters cannot quench love, nor will rivers overflow it. If a man were to give all the riches of his house for love, it would be utterly destroyed. So, the brothers look out, they see her coming. She makes this comment about this love and how she has gotten this love. And I think in 6 and 7, had pointed out, you know, there's kind of three things that she can teach us about love here. And, You know, in verse 6, it says, "For love is as strong as death." Right? In verse 7, "Many waters cannot quench it." And then what happens at the end of 7? Can love be bought? Right? All the riches of man can't do that. So we see that right there. Back to her brothers in verse 8, talking about she's a little sister, and then specifically in 9, I think is the important piece here, where if she is a wall, we will build on her a battlement of silver, but if she is a door, we will barricade her with planks of cedar. Now, what do you think those visions, those references are to? I agree, and I think this is, oddly enough, probably one of the easiest verses to really kind of understand in the whole book, right? That it's pretty simple today to even have that concept, right? That this wall is something that keeps one out, but what's the whole point of a door? Is that you continue to let people in, and the vast difference between that and the fact that this is kind of like her brother's talking about the fact that, you know, if she's this wall, then we will do exactly that. We will help her and we'll continue to make sure that she's a wall. But if she chooses to be this door, then we will step in and have to try to barricade in some way what she does. But in verse 10, what is her comment? Right? It says, "I was a wall, right? And my breasts were like towers. Then I became in his eyes as one who finds peace." And then she kind of finishes up by saying things about all that Solomon has, and then kind of contrast that with what she has, right? Solomon has all these vineyards and all these people that pay him to do all these various things, but she has the only, you know, vineyard in this case, the only, you know, man that she really wants, and she's willing to go and do the hard work, do all the things that she you know, would not have had to do whenever if she had chosen to go the route with Solomon. But she's going to love that because she is with the one who she truly cares about. All right. I think that's it. Thank you for your attention. Sorry for the